You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
Unfortunately, this week Cookie is away. However, we are joined by none other than Professor Elemental.
Hello, how are you? Thanks very much for having me. It's very nice here.
It's great to have you. Yeah. For those
we've been looking forward to having you.
I'm so glad that I finally made it here as well.
For those of you who are unaware, the professor's first name also happens to be Paul.
Hooray!
So I've continued my quest somehow in just bringing people who are called Paul onto this podcast.
One day you are just going to bunch us all together and create a Paul sword.
Or like a giant mech robot.
We must never be in the same place at the same time.
Otherwise it'll be like Time Cup and we're all just going to meld into nothingness.
It'd be too much for the world.
Yes, of course. For those of you who may be unaware, Professor Elemental is a dapper rapper. I was only just thought of saying that. And he has lovely hits such as Fighting Trousers, there's songs about horses, being British, and generally if you look up his music online and his music videos, they're of a spectacular, deviously funny nature.
That's very nice of you to say so. Thanks very much.
Check that. I thought you said hips rather than hits.
Hips? That's like Professor Elemental's hips. I'm sure his hips do feature, obviously, in some of his music videos. They're there.
Yeah. You know.
He hasn't left them out. It's fine.
No CGI effects. They're my actual real hips as well. I try and show them whenever I can.
Good. It's nice to know. Obviously, we've got lots of newsy things we'd like to talk about this week. Obviously, we're going to be talking about the prof's views on certain comic-related matters and other things later on, but news first. And I believe it was Retroid who drew my attention to this in the last few days. It's DC Comics has decided that the women of DC Comics only need 2 pages in the DC Entertainment Essential Graphic Novels and Chronology 2013.
Out of about 70, it has to be pointed out.
So there's basically this lovely contents list that's appeared. Bleeding Cool were kind of covering it. And it's like, you know, pages 4 to 30, 25 essential graphic novels. 31 to 49, DC Comics, The New 52, which we'll be talking about a little bit more later. Pages 44 to 49, that's an amazing 5 pages, Batman. 50 to 55, Superman. 56 to 59, okay, a few less, Green Lantern. 60 to 61, okay, a few less, The Flash. 62 to 63, a few less, Green Arrow. 64 to 67, Justice League. And then pages 68 to 69 are Women of DC Comics. And within those amazing 2 pages, they have packed in Batgirl, Batwoman, Wonder Woman, Catwoman, and Huntress.
Now, is this a list? Are we talking about this book of the DC? It's them saying, these are the graphic novels you must read. This is our catalogue of the bestest graphic novels we've done, type of thing.
Yes, basically. For instance, the Catwoman graphic novel that I think I saw highlighted in some of the screens of the book was it When in Rome, the Jeff Loeb?
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Okay.
Not necessarily the one I'd have picked, but
well, not compared to something like Selena's Big Score, which is like the most amazing graphic novel in the world.
So that was kind of like okay, but it's the fact that they've crammed it. So whereas characters like Superman and Batman have got like something like 5 pages each, within 2 pages we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different DC Comics characters they've been grouped together. I'm just trying to
watch 2, 3,
sorry, 5. Oh, so that's friends to be.
Potentially, that's more of less reflection of DC sexism now, more reflection of there just hasn't been as many really good stories told about women superheroes. They haven't placed that kind of emphasis on them before. It's kind of a sad indictment of the state of things.
Are they too busy being in the fridge?
Was he busy being fridge? Oh no, I suppose especially in the case of Batgirl, that's a chronic issue.
Yeah, I mean it's quite interesting because Huntress is part of Birds of Prey, isn't it? Which is
Huntress, we've got kind of Birds of Prey. Yeah, okay, so she's in Birds of Prey,
which isn't that kind of part of Gotham and
we've got one, four Gotham characters, four characters that end up in the world of Batman most of the time, and then Wonder Woman.
What about like Starfire and stuff?
Yeah. Power Girl?
Yeah, it's Power Girl. I mean, obviously there's...
But they haven't had great graphic novels about them. If this is a book that's saying, hey, these are our best ever graphic novels, there's never been like, oh, Starfire, year one, have you seen that? It's the most amazing comic I've ever read. They just aren't those stories. Those stories, sadly, there's very, very few of them out there. I think DC are marginalising women even more, which is so stupid because there's a huge group of, you know, comic fans.
I would say that between Batwoman, Wonder Woman and Catwoman, they've got enough decent graphic novels between them that they don't need to be crammed into the same pages as Batgirl and Huntress.
Yes, you could be right there. Yeah, you could be quite right.
And of course, who is responsible for the fact that there haven't been that many stories?
Exactly, that's the real point, isn't it?
this is almost proof of their, bias?
Bias? I mean,
sexism, ever since the New 52, we're going to talk about it later, but DC have become, they've just ramped up the sexism just a little bit, haven't they, in every direction, in lots of surreptitious, tiny ways. And I think it's going to mean there's less and less good DC female characters and stories about female characters in DC comics, sadly enough.
Very worrying.
Well, if you consider what they were trying to do with Gail Simone over Batgirl a few months ago, it was more around Christmas time. That was a bit worrying.
What happened there? What was that?
Gail Simone got sacked from writing for the character there, and a guy wrote a couple of issues that were going to be coming up after her run, and then there's huge public outcry, and so DC kind of brought Simone back on, but they'd rather than telling her in a far more formal manner, they'd only just done it through email, which kind of made things even worse. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, so
it's not us, it's you.
But the thing is, though, is that you can't put the blame solely on DC because I don't think Marvel really have that better a track record
for female characters. If we were going to talk about representations of women in comics, apart from the usual sexy issues, the sexualization issues and that,
the sexist.
For instance, I would say Marvel's perhaps got one of the worst repeating representations of the monstrous feminine in their comics with the Phoenix. Whenever Jean Grey ends up being the Phoenix, it's like, there's so much feminist theory I could apply to this, but then I'd run out of time to do other things.
Life's too short.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to move us on to our next bit of news, going for the game's end. And basically, Retro, did you hear about this one?
I did, yes.
Yes, okay. So the news is that the gentleman, Patrice, I cannot pronounce his surname, Desilets, the gentleman that created Assassin's Creed, essentially.
That tiny thing,
one of the most perhaps beyond the COD of this world, the one of the only other games that gets released annually other than sports games,
and the one I actually play and like the COD.
Considering it actually came out this generation as well, and look how many titles there
are. But we haven't told them what the news is with Patrice yet.
Yep, sorry.
So as we have covered previously, THQ went earlier this year. And this has meant that various assets of THQ have been sold off, including THQ Montreal. THQ Montreal is the studio that Patrice Desilets had moved to after leaving Ubisoft several years ago.
But did he leave or was he fired originally?
I can't quite trace that far back in a short period of time when I was writing this outline, but I don't think things were completely amicable back then. And so he went to work for THQ Montreal in 2010, and he had been working on a super secret project called 1666, which, considering the fact that he created Assassin's Creed, seemed to indicate that it was something else set in a historical period.
It's a London fire simulation.
Probably. You know, with full bucket simulation on Kinect. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. But anyway, obviously, so so he moved to THQ Montreal. Come roll on to this year, THQ Montreal got sold off, and Ubisoft bought THQ Montreal. This has only happened in the last month or so, and as a result of this, was it last week or the week before last? I mean, last week this news broke, but Patrice was fired from what Ubisoft had turned THQ Montreal into, and
they said that he left. They parted ways.
To start off with, and then Patrice finally talked to a couple of sites. He's like, no, completely fired. Proper escorted off the premises by security without being even able to collect his own stuff.
God, I know that feeling.
That reminds me that there was an absolutely fantastic comment on the Eurogamer article about this when it hit, and it was just, I wish I'd thought of that. Hats off to you, sir. The comment was. Obviously, paraphrased, he should have just sat on the bench and waited for the guards to walk past. And then went to see his team to, say goodbye. And he goes, or he could have, hired some courtesans and wandered around with those.
I'm just wondering if he goes to another... If he goes to another company that once again gets gobbled up by Ubisoft... whether the same thing will happen again, and it would just be like this repeating kind of thing.
I think after this has happened, the poor bloke's probably going to go completely independent.
You know what would be great? Is if he goes to work for EA, and then EA gets bought by Ubisoft.
I don't think Ubisoft could buy EA.
I don't think EA could buy Ubisoft,
actually. I think they're pretty equally mutually assured destruction in terms of size and financial position.
I thought that was meant to be EA and Activision.
Yeah. No, I would say EA and Ubisoft are a little bit more on par. Activision's a little bit bigger. But then again, their financials weren't as good as they'd hoped last week, dear Activisions. Not that I'm sympathetic to them.
I would also argue that Activision have basically Call of Duty and Blizzard.
Yeah. With declining subscription figures for World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Which is
still obscene, but
So poor Patrice was escorted off the premises of former THQ Montreal, and essentially, by the looks of things, he's probably lost all rights to that 1666 project. Probably lost all rights, and so I feel sorry for the guy, really, because I think he must have left Ubisoft originally over sort of maybe creative differences, kind of situation. Well,
If I'm remembering right, he did have things to say about them churning out annual Assassin's Creeds.
Yeah, I would call that creative differences of a nature. Yeah. To be honest, I've heard lots of people talk about Ubisoft's annual release schedule for the Assassin's Creed games, and it is a bit ridiculous. It appears we've lost Professor Elemental on the call.
No.
We'll see if we can get him back for a bit later. If not, I think he's very keen to be on again by the looks of things. So
maybe he's checking out his horse.
Maybe he's checking out his horse. Or his trousers. Could be his trousers. But anyway.
I could say something there, but I'm not.
Okay, so Patricia Silts, Ubisoft, Assassin's Creed, 1666, what the hell? Basically, we're not sure who owns the rights for 1666, the project that Patrice was working on at THQ Montreal. Considering that, obviously, he was developing it in-house at a studio, that would indicate that it's more likely that the studio owns the rights to the IP, because obviously he would have been using their money and resources. So,
which is going to be annoying for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be an utter pain in the arse.
Being taken off your own project again.
Yeah, it is a bit I do think that he might just go completely independent at this rate and just be like, fudge it all to hell.
He might go completely insane, let alone independent. Everything I create gets taken away from me.
So screw you guys, I'm going to do my own massive $100 million budget game, or however much it costs, on Kickstarter.
And that doesn't release every year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because games take time to develop.
Yes, decent.
Oh, that's crazy.
Decent iterations of games. Okay, next bit of news. I think one of the things that I've kept coming back to when I've been browsing around this past week is, you know, Iron Man 4, will he, won't you? Mr. Robert Downey Jr. Basically, as most people know, he was only contracted for 3 Iron Man films, The Avengers. It's looking like he'll come back for Avengers 2 and 3, but it's looking like he might not be so keen on a 4th Iron Man film. But don't forget that he has a lot of negotiating rights. Iron Man's one of the strongest characters.
Yeah.
Out of all of the Avengers films. And
I'd argue probably the...
Yeah, he's...
Possibly the only character.
He's the one that's had the biggest pulling power at the box office. Oh, yeah. And essentially would be the hardest to replace without basically bringing the film down to kind of the revenue levels of something like Thor or Captain America or Hulk.
I mean, it's kind of weird how the contract was just like, for 3 Iron Man films.
And the Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, if I was actually planning on doing an entire series of films and I don't know when I would stop, I'd basically just have, you know, some sort of deal where he gets a little bit, paid a little bit extra than the previous film each time.
Then obviously you still have to give them the option of leaving if they wanted to.
And also consider just how successful previous to Iron Man, how successful the Marvel superhero films had been.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Not hugely, to be honest.
Well, not compared to what they are now.
No. Mm. I want him back at the same time, though. It'd be like, well, where would you go from Iron Man 3 for a solo Iron Man film? I don't want to spoil anything.
La 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 la.
Exactly.
I've not seen it yet.
But it would be kind of difficult. I could see how he could work into some Avengers films.
Although I do know in the new film, isn't the bad guy an orange or something?
He's a type of orange, yes. He's very fruity.
He's annoying orange.
It's not Megan Fox again, is it? Annoyingly orange.
No, you're fine, you're safe.
Okay.
But yeah, meanwhile, whilst negotiations are clearly going on between Downey and Marvel Studios or whatever, or his agent, or whoever's representing him.
Excuse me, I think that's Mr. Downey.
His bank.
His bank, yes. Joss Whedon's had to go on...
Joss.
Whedon. It's too late.
Jock Whedon.
Mr. Whedon.
That dude who created Buffy and Firefly-like...
Firefly, I miss.
And directed the Avengers. He's had to dispel rumors on his website saying he isn't going to earn £100 million from next Avengers. Not £100 million, $100 million. £100 million would actually be more money, despite the economic crisis.
Because it's a proper currency.
Oh, no.
Just trolling the United States Treasury.
I don't know who started this rumor. I think it was one of the comic book sites, because like one of the mainstream comic sites, because I saw another thing going earlier, like, oh, Robert Downey Jr. is asking for like $100 million for like the next blah, and I was like, really? I can't
like talking bollocks.
I can't imagine any actor, despite pulling power, being able to negotiate that much money, or even a director, because it's like some of the most expensive films made in like the last few years in terms of effects, or the last 5 years, you're looking at over $300 million for the budget. I'm like, there's no bloody way they'd pay a third of that kind of budget.
No.
To an actor or a director.
Even if they were.
You know, this will shock you, but I think some people on the internet just like talking, you know, massive bollocks.
Yes.
So they can get, you know, see if they can start a rumor going. There was that whole thing with Bioshock Infinite that it cost something like $200 million
oh, geez.
To make. And that was why Ken Levine was going around saying what he would have had to have done for it to cost that much. You know, like a freshly minted golden cut piece every day. You know, all that kind of thing. It's just stop. Yeah, it's costing money, but stop with just stop talking bollocks.
Well, I think that would be the enemy in the fourth Iron Man film is internet trolls.
Yeah, it's Iron Man.
For some reason, I'm being reminded of was it Jane, Silent Bob Strike?
Yes, yeah. that is of course the traditional and perhaps most well tested fictional way of dealing with internet trolls before people realised the public realised there was a thing known as internet trolls.
And all that travel is why he needs $100 million.
Yep. As he gets a baseball bat and gives him a good licking.
Okay, let's start a rumor now. He's going. Robert Downey Jr., this is going to get a working Iron Man suit for every single film from this point on.
Yes.
And then solve crime with it.
Yes, and he'll have one that has stealth technology as well.
Yeah.
Yep. he'll get this, and that will be his fee for like the next couple of films. Yeah, totally.
To be honest, I can imagine a lot of people would be like, you know what? Yeah, I'll take the suit. No money. I'll take the suit. That's fine with me.
Because it's awesome.
To be honest, though, they'd probably end up being like rounded up by some security force within about 10 seconds of the suit being handed over to them. So they'd have to be have the suit handed over to them for some kind of crime to be properly sort of logged. And then, yeah, it'd just be like...
Have they thought about that for a plot of one of the films?
Maybe they should. Yeah, let's go sell that as well for $100 million.
It's Iron Man fourth wall breaking.
Yes. Oh, do you know what? I'm imagining, obviously, Dr. Evil making wage demands on behalf of Robert Downey Jr.
Dr. Evil, which... Really
Austin Powers. Oh,
right, sorry. For a second there, I thought you meant Dr. Evil. Is it Dr. Evil? No, it's Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, it's not Dr. Horrible, but that's Whedon. That could be why you're thinking it. I need
demands.
Just I would prefer Dr. Horrible over Dr.
We've never had any example of Dr. Horrible, at least not yet. Dr. Horrible kind of making claim to vast amounts of money. He's moaned about costs.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's actually had to go out there and claim cost.
I would have noticed it. I'm a big fan of his blog.
Yeah. Can I just say that Dr. Evil is legend? Wait for it. Airy.
Oh.
How I Met Your Mother?
Okay. No, you just said Dr. Evil rather than Dr. Horrible.
What?
Are you sure? Yes, you said Dr. Evil, not Dr. Horrible.
Oh, no.
Do you know what? Maybe
Joke fail.
I think perhaps Dr. Horrible should appear in an Avengers film as a backup.
I want at least a cameo, like a photo on a wall or something.
Oh, what's the name of the horse?
It's just Bad Horse.
Bad Horse. Yes, he should totally have a cameo as well in like Avengers or something. Yeah.
And if anyone listening to this has not seen Dr. Horrible's sing along blog, for God's sake, go and watch it.
Yeah.
It's not very long, so you ain't got much of an excuse, I'm afraid.
I mean, obviously there is the problem of it's never been shown on TV, so you're probably not going to get it for free unless you do something illegal.
Yes.
I'm not saying what.
It's got YouTube somewhere. But they do sell a DVD of it, which I do own. I have the legit DVD, and it's excellent.
As do we. There's also a comic graphic novel collection as well.
Plus, I mean, it's Nathan Fillion and Simon Halbert as well, and Felicia Day.
Felicia Day.
have you just discovered one of your...
my picadillos.
Yeah. Picadillos.
So yeah, basically, Dan Jr. probably, I bet for, but Avengers 2 3, yeah, most probably is going to happen. Meanwhile, elsewhere in geekdom.
Always.
Before we get going, if only Buffy was actually picked up by Marvel, then we could actually have Buffy in the Avengers. That'd be quite bizarre and weird, but it kind of
would... I'm not sure how that universe would work.
No. I don't think... it'd just end up with some kind of cruddy universe merging storyline. I mean, I love... Is it Mortal Kombat versus DC or DC versus Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
Which way around? But at the same time, the storyline for why stuff happens in that is just like...
I mean, I can understand certain aspects like, you know, why Superman can actually get his ass kicked and stuff like that. But by the same token, the whole idea... So I'm not sure whether you've played it or not, but the whole idea behind the story is that Darkseid gets defeated and sent into this... well, other dimension, this portal weird kind of thing.
Mm.
Same time that Shao Kahn from the Mortal Kombat universe does. And they somehow merge and come back to terrorize both the realms.
And merge them together. Anyway, I'm going to move us on to decent video game news. Because I first heard about this a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh yeah. And then there was silence. There were crickets for over a year. Finally, it's been announced that Telltale Games... are working on a Fables video game. Booyah.
That's probably... which confused me, because I thought, hang on, Peter Molyneux thing? And go, oh no, different thing.
Yeah, different thing, based off of the Fables comics.
Hmm. This one has an S.
Yeah, this one has an S.
Fables.
So it's based off the Fables comics. The game is going to be called The Wolf Among Us, and it's actually a prequel to the main Fables comics that are currently published by Vertigo. It's following Bigby Wolf, a.k.a. the Big Bad Wolf, as he does his detective thing in Fable Town while investigating a murder. Fable Town, in case you don't know, is like this town that's kind of maybe near New York, but it's like where all the... Fable story characters live after being exiled from their actual sort of more mystical world. Bad stuff happened. Right. They got exiled, but they had to live separately from humans because they do have powers and stuff. And basically, like, the mayor of Fable Town and, like, Bigby Wolf, most of their work is spent trying to keep Fable Town safe from the humans, or the humans safe from Fable Town, depending on your point of view. Anyway, there's been a murder. And... you're going to be playing Bigby Wolf as he investigates this murder. And it's going to have this whole thing where, like with the Walking Dead games, the Telltale have done, where basically what you say and do will have consequences as to how the game will play out. Different characters will respond to you differently, depending on the options and the evidence that you do or don't gather over the course of the game.
Am I right in thinking that, you know, a lot of Telltale games like The Walking Dead and I think Back to the Future have, like, episodic...
Yeah, so... Will this be the same?
Do you know?
I'm not sure if it's going to be in episodes quite yet. It might be. There was a huge piece in Game Informer, which I will be linking to.
It's kind of weird how, you know, games are actually starting to become more... like TV, like in that episodic nature. I mean, part of the thing with Shadow of the Eternals that we talked about last week,
which now has a Kickstarter.
Yeah, which now officially has a Kickstarter, is basically set into seasons. So, you know, you've got the first season, which is 12 episodes.
I think it's just the fact that obviously you're not developing a huge chunk of game in one go. So if sales figures do drop off beyond a certain point after one episode's been released and you're like, right, let's not waste any more time or money with this, leave it. I think that's probably where they're kind of aiming for it.
Do you reckon we're going to be seeing this more and more often? Like, we're going to have a production team working on episodic content rather than... you know, just having like almost like a film bulk.
It's something that a lot of places have been talking about.
Yeah, there have been a few false starts with this, like Sin episodes, if anyone remembers those. And of course, Half-Life 2 episode 3, for God's sake. just bring it out before I have to play through the entire thing again.
And then torment yourself again.
Yeah, it's just the ending.
I, you know what I reckon? At Valve HQ, they're actually missing the 3 on all of their keyboards.
Perhaps that's what it is.
We haven't seen, you know, anything about a Team Fortress 3. We haven't seen anything about Portal 3 or, you know...
Left
4 Dead 3.
But then I think that's just because they're too busy just rolling around in money. Certainly from me. Oh, another sale on Steam and another series on Steam that has come down in price. Yeah, go on then. I've got no time to play it. I'll buy it.
Going back to Fables video game, I'm actually really excited about this because I'm not a prolific Fables reader, but I have read quite a few of them here and there, and I did read the first sort of full standalone graphic novel that they released last year, which was Werewolves of the Heartland, which again that followed Bigby Wolf kind of doing his thing.
This is all new on me. I've not heard of them before.
Wow.
Shame. Shame.
Yeah, there's probably, I hate to say it, probably the most decent thing Vertigo have got going for them at the moment.
From what I've heard, that's not saying that much, really.
Yeah, it's been going for quite a while, the series. But it's kind of cool. I mean, it existed before Once Upon a Time. And like Grimm, you know, it's
yeah, which I do watch, but it's
I'm just thinking about, you know, other stuff that Telltale have done. Am I right in thinking that stuff like Monkey Island and Sam and Max?
No.
My...
That was LucasArts. Or did they develop?
Oh yeah, sorry, LucasArts did the development for Monkey Island.
I think you better stop confusing yourself with that. Just. Yeah.
And I also get confused with the name of Telltale versus Traveller's Tales, which obviously do Lego games.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's too many Tales.
Although I remember them more for doing things like Sonic 3D Blast on the Mega Drive, but...
Sorry. Thinking about the comics books becoming video games, I was going to do a plug. I don't know how many of you guys are based in Cornwall, but this month's Cornwall Graphic Novel Group meeting, that's happening on the 25th of May, 2 p.m. in Beowulf Books, Falmouth.
Incidentally, my birthday.
Oh, I'm sorry that you probably won't be able to make it all the way from Carlisle to come hang with us and talk about all things to do with The Walking Dead.
Boo.
We don't care if people...
Is that a boo because you can't come, or is that a boo because...
It's a boo because you're spiting me with it.
All right.
We're going to be discussing cool things.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Walking Dead from the comics to the TV series to the video game, whatever people have kind of delved into, or if they want to know more.
Well, I've got a spare sofa.
Yeah, but I mean, Carlisle to Cornwall, that's
It's a tiny trip, really.
Yeah, it's a tiny trip if you have your own jet.
Yeah.
Do you have your own jet?
I'll check. It might be in my underground hangar.
Is it able to kind of like avoid radar?
No, because it's a jet that's underground.
Failing that, if you've got an Iron Man suit.
Iron Man suit. Yeah, go get Iron Man suit, Retroid.
You see, this is what you get if you refuse to do Iron Man films. You don't get the Iron Man suit.
Exactly. Retroid.
I should have thought of that.
You shouldn't have turned down that offer to be the next villain.
Well, the villain's good as well.
The Mango.
Yeah, the Mango. You shouldn't have turned that down.
The Melon.
I'm just hoping that nobody actually thinks that we're serious about that. I'm pretty sure that they won't, but...
I hope too. Okay, I'm going to just bring us back again to Fables just for a moment. So, like I said, it's going to have consequences the same way that the Walking Dead games did in terms of how you talk to people, how you collect evidence and stuff. It will affect things. Due to the relationship between, it's a big thing in the comics, but Snow White and Bigby Wolf kind of have a thing.
A sexy time thing.
I'm not sure if they've actually managed to come together.
So to speak.
Is this literally a wolf or is it just a name?
He is the personification of the big bad wolf. He's like a true werewolf, but not. It's very complicated, and it does get covered in Werewolves of the Heartland, which came out last year.
Okay,
but he looks like a human most of the time, but he's got quite a lot of wolfy things going on for him, like sense of smell, hearing, body hair.
Has to turn around three times before going to sleep.
that kind of thing. But yeah, him and Snow White have got kind of a thing. I'm not entirely sure about the story at the moment, but Snow White does play a huge part, and your interactions with her are potentially quite key as well as you investigate this murder. So yeah, and then I want to, if everyone's okay, I want to move us on to, I think, the news that's been, that's peeved Paul off the most this week.
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah, it's basically that EA are being a bit, well, dickish to Nintendo, and have basically said that yeah, the Wii U will miss out on pretty much every game that it's doing.
Shall I point a little factoid out? The last time EA did something like this with a console?
Was that Nintendo as well? Yeah, they've had a long history.
No, it was actually the Dreamcast.
Oh.
Where EA said, we're not going to be bothering with that format.
That didn't end well for the Dreamcast.
It didn't.
There was a lot of sports games it missed out on, let alone anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's kind of weird that they're doing this now, because they seemed quite pro Wii U.
Oh yeah, they completely were. They helped, well, they were rumoured to help shape the Wii U's online system. And, you know, they kind of announced so many different games for it, you know, new Battlefield 3 and, well, sorry, Battlefield 4, or one of them.
And they actually did publish the port of, you know, Mass Effect.
Mass Effect 3, Assassin's Creed 3.
No, that's Ubisoft.
That's Ubisoft. Yeah. Sorry, my bad. But yeah, they did all that. And yeah, Nintendo, well, because they wanted Nintendo to actually use Origin system for their online. And Nintendo was like, no, I don't think we're going to use that. So
I think the only ones who wanted them to use Origin for online were EA.
Yeah.
Certainly no bugger who's ever had to use it on the PC would want to.
Well, no, exactly. And so EA have kind of turned around and said, oh, well, you know, we've got this engine and, yeah, that we're using for all of our games. And, yeah, it's not been too promising for the Wii U, despite the fact that, you know, Frostbite 2 has been running on, you know, Xbox 360 and PS3. And, you know, EA have just turned around and said, oh, yeah, well, it's had not too promising results with Frostbite 2, so they're basically not going to use it for Frostbite 3
either. Which all sounds like a bit of a pitiful excuse if you consider how chummy they were seeming earlier last year.
Yeah,
I think it's very bad timing by Nintendo, because they've got this new format where they're saying, hey, we're up to spec. In, you know, in some ways more, as in RAM, in some ways less, with, you know, some of the capabilities of the, you know, the GPU and the CPU. But, you know, sort of broadly in line PS3 and 360. But then Sony and Microsoft are coming along and saying, hey, we're going to be doing massive console upgrades at the end of this year. Even though Microsoft haven't yet, but they will. We know they will. They don't want to get caught out.
Their announcement is next week.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're
saying, you know, so, you know, we're doing these new formats. Obviously, all the developers are, you know that they have to be on board with this. So they're shifting to, well, they already have shifted. Obviously, you know, by now, you know, with games taking, you know, a few years to develop, to these new higher spec, higher demand, you know, middleware engines.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Wii is sitting here saying, "Hey, we can do this generation stuff now." And so, yeah, but we're throwing all our money being ready for this new one.
But a couple of points that I actually want to make: EA, as soon as the Nintendo Wii actually starts doing well and starts having a decent market share, EA are going to turn around and say, "Oh yeah, we were wrong. You know, we'll stick on whatever games you want."
Well, because EA are assholes, but they're not going to turn down money.
Exactly. Second thing of all, I actually think that come this Christmas, because obviously there's going to be more Wii U games coming out throughout, you know, the year. You know, we've already, well, to a certain extent, promised, you know, Mario 3D title, you know, Pikmin 3, a couple of others. But think about the launch of the PS4 and, what is it, Durango, or whatever the next Xbox is going to be called.
Xbox Infinity.
As far as I'm aware, most developers have actually turned around and said that the games that are coming out for that, they'll also be available on 360 and PS4 PS3 because they've got the install base.
For the exact same reason we're saying that, you know, if the Wii U suddenly starts, you know, selling, you know, far more, then, you know, EA and, you know, several of the other developers that have gone about it will suddenly start releasing.
Exactly. I mean, considering with EA as well, you know, because they were the publishers behind Crysis 3. And they had Crysis 3 working absolutely fantastically on the Wii U. There was no problem with it using the Cry engine. But the excuse for it to being scrapped altogether was because of a lack of working relationship between EA and Nintendo. So that obviously speaks volumes to, you know, the real reason why EA don't want
to do
that.
I'd love to know what's going on there. There are so many stories in the games industry that I'd love to be a fly on the wall.
I mean, if it was the whole sort of certainly snubbing Origin thing, if that were the case, then it's kind of like, it's a bit, I kind of wonder about that, because I can't imagine anyone being, as a company, silly enough to think that a platform holder that, well, it hasn't been very great with keeping stuff up, releasing stuff at a reasonable speed. I mean, Nintendo's market system for the Wii worked. The new version for the Wii U works. Why would they go with a third-party system on their hardware?
Yeah. Also, I was just pondering there that would it be fair to say that one of the reasons the Wii got such traction is that you had the PS2, which was still selling well, so things could be, you know, ported sideways, you know, with enhancements.
Yeah.
You also had PSP / PS2 development with some titles, things like Grand Theft Auto, Liberty City Stories, and such, coming out on both PSP and PS2. So you had that sign, that kind of, even though a lot of the big development had gone 360 and PS3, you still had developers who were working on, you know, the lower level hardware, so the Wii U could, you know, gain from that.
Yeah.
Oh, the Wii, rather. Whereas with this, what does the Vita? That's about the only thing I can really think of. That's, you know, that kind of level.
Yeah.
So it's a catch-22.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the kind of PS2 and whatnot, you'll see that quite a way into the PS3's lifetime, they were still developing games for the PS2 and, you know, releasing them. So
I've got a feeling that the PS3 is not going to have anywhere near as, you know, longer tail.
Do you mean PS3 or PS4?
As in PS3. I think it's been so pricey for them, and you know, they're wanting to get so many, you know, developers on board.
I think what's going to prove the case for everything, or what could make or break things with all three of them this year, is obviously the sort of pre-Christmas sales. And basically, I'm assuming Microsoft and Sony are aiming to be out in all major territories before Christmas, right?
That's the theory.
Although one or both will probably shaft Europe.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Yeah.
But let's face it, they're going to be still more expensive than the Wii U.
Yeah.
Now, if we consider the reason that the Wii sold really well this generation was that at the beginning, its price was still a lot lower, certainly a lot lower than the PS3, lower than the Xbox 360 extent.
There were cars that were less than the PS3.
Yeah. if we consider the fact that these consoles are now launching in a global downturn for the West, and home territories for Nintendo, because, you know, Japan's still not doing that well economically, though it's doing better than it has been.
And that's another issue as well, because Nintendo's largest, you know, their best territory would be Japan. But Japan has gone, the games market there has diverged quite severely from the West, in that they've gone heavily handheld.
Yes. Yeah. The 3DS continues to do really well.
Exactly.
The 3DS is kicking ass in Japan. But
Well, if you think about it, there's a lot of people on the internet now kind of almost sounding the death knell to the Wii U. And it's like, those same people would have been doing it for the 3DS for the first 6 months that it was out. You know, and now it's actually building up quite a good catalogue of titles, and it's booming.
Oh, the Wii U is not doomed in my book. The Wii U is in trouble, and Nintendo have to pull their finger out.
Yeah.
But it's not a, oh, I wouldn't go anywhere near those, there's going to be fire sales. They have to do something. And you know, there are reasons why I think it's in trouble. And, you know, speaking personally, I am waiting for the prices, you know, for the PS4 and the, you know, the next Xbox. Those are the ones I'm interested in, and I do want to pick up a Wii U, but it's simply, at the moment, with the upcoming next-gen consoles, it's too pricey for me, and there's not enough. Yeah.
But, the thing that's holding me back about saying for definite whether or not I'm going to get a next-generation Xbox or the PS4 is not just potential price, but membership and online structure. Because I'm a bit wary of anything that's going to be a bit too internet heavy, because despite the work being done to improve the infrastructure down in Cornwall, online gaming is not necessarily well placed when one has upgraded one's connection. And so especially if anyone tries any online only type stuff, then I'm going to be like, no. Basically, I might become...
Too many variables and too many things that can go wrong with a, you know, constant online.
I'd be a case of, I'll be sticking with the Wii U and hoping it doesn't go the way of the Dreamcast, investing in handheld a bit more, and playing on the PC more, amazingly, because there's still a lot of stuff being released that isn't kind of online-only DRM crapified.
Unless it's Ubi with their stupid DRM on PC.
Mind you, EA's not been too much better with that either. So,
but I mean, obviously, the thing is with the Wii is that the Wii.
The Wii.
Okay. Is that basically there was a lot of people that had multiple consoles. They had both a Wii and a 360, whether the Wii was gathering dust or not. So I think we're going to basically see this same thing where, you know, people are either going to buy a next Xbox or they're going to buy the PS4, and then they might have another console, you know, beside that, which, you know, could actually potentially be the Wii U. So in a way, Nintendo is in a good position because they're not competing. They're not kind of in between the Xbox 360 and PS3. They're kind of to the side of it where owners will have both.
I do see what you mean, but my issue with is that with the Wii, you could grasp exactly what they were flogging. With the Wii U, is it a tablet for my Wii?
Well, the thing is it a
touchpad computer? They have that issue with the general public.
Yeah, I can see to a certain extent, and if the rumors are true about them basically giving dev kits to, or well, maybe not dev kits, but software for mobile developers to actually port their games to the Wii U as well, so they're capturing quite a good mobile market. Couple that with the fact that there's actually quite a few things on Kickstarter that seem incredibly friendly to the Wii U. So, you know, we may actually see Nintendo actually being less of a, you know, kind of go to the shops to buy the games and more of a downloading type.
Who knows? This could be their shock that they need, you know, to pull their pants up, really. You know, just like Sony with the, you know, the arrogance of, you know, the PS3 will sell no matter, you know, how much we charge or, you know, whatever we do with it.
Yeah, we expect people to get, like, a second job to pay for their PS3 type thing.
Yeah, and you say, I'm not going to. And just to remind people, when the PS3 was released in Europe, it was a year after the, you know, the 360. Actually, over a year, wasn't it? Because,
yeah, it was.
Yeah, and it was £425.
That's for the basic unit, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's bearing in mind that when the 360 had released a year earlier, that was £320. And I know people who, you know, work in the you know, the local shops, and they were saying, yeah, people put their pre-orders in, and as soon as, you know, we sold those pre-orders, off a cliff.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Sony really had to learn that lesson. So with this, it could be that Nintendo have to realize that you have to have the software developers on your side. And also, get your bloody price down.
Well, I can agree with a Wii U with the price to a certain extent. I mean, I think what's happened is because the Wii U hasn't been taken off, retailers have obviously, you know, dropped their price for it, but that means it's not kind of dented Nintendo's profits in terms of how much they get back from each console, if you know what I mean. Because obviously Nintendo would have shipped at a certain price, and then it's in the retailer's hands to kind of sell at whatever the price they want. So
it does make me wonder if any of these stores that are selling, you know, the basic Wii U for was it 150?
Yeah,
several of them were.
Yeah,
whether they'd actually be making any money on that.
It's
possible,
like,
but not much for definite.
Yeah, there are issues there, because if these shops are having to sell off their consoles at, well, possibly cost.
Yeah, then it's going to be problematic for them.
And we can all agree here, can't we, that none of us want the Wii U to fail as a format.
Definitely not.
None of us want Nintendo not to have a home console. Simply not that up on the idea of a lot of handhelds, and I like Nintendo's output, and I like the kind of output that Nintendo attract on their home consoles. So I want this thing to work out for them. Yeah. So, you know, get more people on your side, get people actually interested and educated on what the Wii U actually is. Get them in, you know, in the big shops, in the big supermarkets, and hooray, there we go.
Yeah,
absolutely,
definitely
agreed. Especially with the supermarkets bit.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the whole educating the public as to what the console can do, what kind of things are available for it. They really need to get that messaging sorted out.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great features about a lot of the games that is coming out on the Wii U is the fact that you can actually take it off the TV and play it, you know, as is, you know, on the tablet controller, which frees up the TV for somebody else to play the 360.
If you wanted to. Which we have done, actually.
Yeah.
And have everything that was available on the Wii Virtual Console, have it available on the Wii U Virtual Console, and have it all playable on the tablet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want.
All right. I'm afraid that is all we've got time for this evening. We're going to try and get the prof back.
The prof
back in the near future. He is furious at technology from the messages we've managed to get from him.
He's
not via Skype.
His fist at the sky. Sky gods.
The sky or Skype gods he's shaking his fist at.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, not sure whether he has Sky broadband. Damn you, Murdoch.
Yeah, it's pretty... I don't know. But basically, we'll hopefully have the prof back in the near future, where he'll actually contribute to an entire episode and give us his views on a whole bunch of comic-y things.
I hope he doesn't mind us calling him the prof.
The professor. Well, at least we're not calling him, like, Professor Oak or something, because that would be getting things really confused. I'm trying to think of other professors.
Professor Layton,
Professor Oak.
Professor Science.
Yeah.
Possibly one that only exists in my head, but there you go.
Yeah. We will have the musician, otherwise known as Professor Elemental, hopefully back on the show soon. So, it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891, and you can also read some stuff by me on drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus under Nerds Assemble Podcasts.
So basically everywhere.
Everywhere.
Perhaps that's why the internet's slowing down.
It's us.
We're watching you right now. Stop that.
So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.